I must admit, I'm a bit of a Luddite when it comes to smartphone technology, and these new iPhones just add more and more features I can't fathom the use of. Can smartphones really continue to add new features indefinitely?
It's mind-boggling, isn't it, what they can do? Look, I think, there's two sorts of answers I can provide there. Yes, they can, and there's going to be a limit to how much our poor little brains are going to be able to cope with. Look, what's driving a lot of this is the computation behind the phones. I mean, the early phones that we were using, I mean, we used to call them dumb phones. They didn't really work. Then we ended up with these smartphones. Really, it's the software, the heuristics, the AI, the artificial intelligence behind them that's really pushing these advantages. I mean, one of the key advantages you see in the latest lineup from in these iPhones is the camera system. And of course, that will only work with all the computation behind that, with the computational photography. So one of the key changes we've seen as we move into, you know, the newer range of smartphones and portable tech really is this push to have the CPUs, that's the onboard computer, actually do a heck load of additional processing to provide us with features that either we didn't know were possible or features that we didn't know we needed.
As you mentioned with the cameras there, I mean, iPhones, other smartphones and the like, they've been making more and more other devices redundant, like cameras, MP3 players with this latest update, potentially, you know, laptops for a lot of people. Is there a way these devices could become even more integrated with our work and home lives than they are already?
Well, I think they can. So, and you've hit the nail on the head there. What you're seeing is the all-in-one device. So, you know, previously we used to have to carry a separate camera, a phone, and all these sorts of things. Of course, the carry-all now is just the one device. I mean, that's all I carry. I just carry a single iPhone. I've got all my stuff on that device. And yes, the extension will still continue. So we've recently seen mobile phones take over cash payment system, so we now have contactless payment built in, so that's another area where they're starting to be directed. Also with smart homes, so you'll start seeing a lot more standard fittings, so light fixtures, power fixtures, things like that, start to have a lot more smarts built into that. And again, you're relying on the computation of the phone and the smart home itself to do a lot of communication, realize, oh, he's home, or, you know, the car needs to go out, I'll roll up the door for that. So you're starting to see a lot more of this integration that's happening as we put more and more computational power into everyday devices, and it's happening right now. And that is something that a lot of people are having a bit of trouble catching up with. I mean, I was wandering around the other day, and I suddenly realised that in IKEA they've got computer controlled blinds. I mean, even IKEA are getting into these sorts of things. So this is what's happening now in the world. A lot of things becoming connected. We've got the Internet of Things. That's where we have a lot of devices connected to the internet. There might be, I don't know, windows, curtains. They might be temperature sensors, and they're all available online. So that modern technology, like these phones, these latest smartphones, can access them and interact with them. And it's happening right now, and it's something that, unfortunately, we as the average consumer are not really going to be able to avoid. It's kind of thrust upon us, and so we either need to hide under a rock, which is sometimes what I do, or start to see how some of this technology can improve our lives.
And certainly when it comes to the average consumer, the fairly substantial price that is put on these iPhones and the Pro iPhones and all the like, are we creating a real divide between the haves and the have-nots for early adopters and for those that can afford the tech?
We are, but luckily in this world we've got choice. We've got a lot of choice. So if we just take, for instance, some might consider the rather high price of these new smartphones, and this is not unusual. So the Pro sector of the smartphone pricing structure is really starting to be pushed higher and higher, but that's because there's more value to be seen in using those devices as a professional. And it is creating a divide. So there's a lot of features available in these somewhat higher priced devices that those features aren't available in lower priced devices. So there is a divide between the person who has the average, you know, $200, medium range smartphone and these high end phones. There is a functionality difference. They do different things. But at the end of the day, the consumer does have a choice as to which way they want to go. But it is creating a digital divide. But luckily, it's not actually as bad as it sounds, because we're relying very much on these new smartphones, all this new technology to slowly trickle its way down to the lower price bracket. So you'll find, as always, that a lot of the new features that you're seeing in these smartphones and these flagship devices will be available in the average, you know, corner store $50 phone in the next 5 years. So it's not a bad thing. It is creating a digital divide for the right here, right now, though. And that's going to be an increasing problem as society might, say, require particular features of new smartphones. For instance, I mean, this is just a simple example. We might have healthcare websites that require fairly grunty mobiles and laptops to be able to run that website. And the experience of that website might not be all that good on a lower price device. And that's a classic example where a service is unable to be used by some of its clientele because of this divide.
And that also puts me in the mindset, you've sort of mentioned some of the issues around manufacturers insisting, well, if you need to get a phone repaired or you need to get some sort of work done, you don't really own the device in the sense the only person allowed to do any work on it is the manufacturers themselves. So looking at those kinds of exclusive behaviours that you mentioned there, do we also see that divide coming in terms of, well, we're going to have the iPhone users over here and they can access these things and they can do these sorts of things, the Android users over here that can access and do these sorts of things, and creating the divide there as well?
There's a lot of that happening, and it's not actually necessarily associated or limited to smartphones or flagship devices. So we're seeing around the world this move for manufacturers to take control of the entire ownership of the device. So, well, maybe not the ownership, maybe the lifetime of the actual device. And that's done for a couple of reasons. One could be to gain more money. So, in other words, you might produce, let's just say, a flagship phone. You produce a flagship phone, and you don't allow anyone to repair that. And so you then, as a manufacturer, are able to control the lifetime of that device and offer more services, and the return per user is slightly higher. And we're seeing that as well occur for where repairs could cause problems. So one of the issues, for instance, that a lot of phone manufacturers have is with potentially third-party batteries going a little bit south and actually potentially creating a fire hazard. And look, that can happen with any sort of battery. I mean, batteries are a really interesting technology in that even brand new batteries can suddenly break down and cause these sorts of problems. But of course, by now controlling the repair process, you're also able to ensure that your manufacturing processes are followed and that particular repairs are done in a particular way to minimize any potential litigation as a result of the device going bad. So we're seeing that in the mobile phone sector, but we're also seeing that in the agricultural sector and many, many other areas, for instance, the automotive sector, where manufacturers were the only people able to repair and maintain those particular devices. But luckily, through the use of the right to repair legislation that's coming in the US and around the world, it's starting to open up a little bit more, where we as the consumers get a choice in how we get our devices repaired.
Well, it's a bit hard to predict what the future will hold with these devices. Going back a couple of decades, I don't think we'd know where we'd be today, but certainly very interesting to talk about. Andrew, thanks very much.
You're most welcome.